Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Meller.
Happy Saturday afternoon. Welcome on in. I am Jeff Meller, 312-332-3776. That's the number if you want to join me here on White Sox Weekly today. And oh, what a week it was, folks. White Sox finish off their road trip with two series wins as they go 4-2 on the trip. And then they return home last night to begin their six-game homestand here at Raitt Field, which continues today. But the White Sox continued with a win over the Nats yesterday evening. It has been a fantastic week for the White Sox. It has been a homer-filled week, which you're going to be inundated with throughout the entirety of White Sox Weekly. I'm not going to lie. We had five straight games with Munetaka Murakami home runs, and he took a brief respite on Thursday, the last game of the road trip. And then quickly got right back into action with a home run last night here at Raitt Field. He now has 11 on the season, and he is tied for the major league lead with Yordan Alvarez. So Murakami is the headliner. There's no doubt about that. It is undeniable. You have a Japanese superstar. He is international, so that certainly adds to the storyline. But what he's been able to do here in the early going has been fantastic to watch. And it's also, I think, taken some of the pressure off some of the other bats that the White Sox have been relying on, or at least were relying on, to take another step up this season. And that, of course, would be Colson Montgomery and Miguel Vargas, who also put together quite consecutive streaks of their own. Montgomery, four home runs in four straight games during Munakami's five-game stretch. And then Miguel Vargas himself had a streak of three consecutive games with a home run as well, also during Murakami's stretch, also during Montgomery's stretch. So it was a fantastic week for the White Sox, not just winning, but hitting a lot of home runs. And let's be honest, when your team has the ability to go deep as often as the White Sox are showing here in the early going, it just makes it that much more fun to watch. Because if your team falls behind, you know that one with one swing of the bat, they can be right back in it in a blink of an eye. They can flip a score on you. So the power has been fun to watch. And let's be honest, too. The White Sox, after last night, now have seven home runs here at Raitt Field. Now, they certainly have played a lot more games on the road here in the early going, but it has been cold here in the Midwest, and generally March, April home run numbers are always going to be down across baseball. And that, I think, is part of the, you know, reason why the White Sox, you know, were struggling to hit some home runs here at Raitt Field in the early going. They're back. Yesterday night was perfect. The weather was absolutely picturesque. 72 degrees at first pitch. I mean, it was an incredible night weather-wise for baseball. And we would anticipate that now that we're getting closer to May, we're going to be seeing probably a lot warmer temps here. And you as a White Sox fan know as well as I do that when it gets a little bit warmer here at Raitt Field, the ball generally flies out at a prolific rate. So, long way of saying that Murakami's 11 home runs right now are very impressive, but boy, there certainly could be a lot more coming here later in the summer. And I think one of the surprising things for a lot of people around baseball, Munetaka Murakami, the scouting report on him in the winter when he was coming over was that, listen, he struggled with in-zone contact against velocity, high velocity in the Japanese league. And so, honestly, I think that's why there was a somewhat muted level of interest around baseball because I think there were just concerns. Hey, could Murakami come over to the Major League Baseball, the most competitive baseball league in the world, and make the transition and still be a productive player when velocity was something that he had struggled with in his career in Japan? Now, because generally you're talking, I think the average fastball in Japan is somewhere around 91, 92 miles per hour compared to about 95 in Major League Baseball. So certainly if he was struggling with it in Japan, you can understand why some teams might have been a little bit reluctant to go ahead and say, hey, we want this guy. We want to make him the centerpiece of our offense. Well, guess what? Chris Getz and the White Sox organization are the beneficiaries of everybody else being too scared to make an investment in Munetaka Murakami, because right now I think he's probably the – I think after the week he had, I'm going to go ahead and say it. I don't think this is in any way, colored or, biased. I think Murakami is the story in baseball after this past week. Now, certainly the home run streak – lends credence to why that would be the case, but I think people knew, we love a new shiny toy, and for a lot of people watching Munetaka Murakami play baseball, that's what it is. And here's the kicker. So sure, he still is struggling with his in zone contact rate, but as I just noted, he is tied for the league lead with 11 home runs. So clearly, he's finding a way to be productive. Let's add on the fact that he has struck out 36 times in 90 at-bats, but he's also taken 22 walks. So he's got 11 homers, 22 walks in 26 games. He has also added 12 singles to his stat column, which means he's hitting .256. With a .398 on base, a .622 slug, that's good for a .1020 OPS. I don't care how big of a, how much of a stat head you want to avoid being. You don't need me to tell you at this point in 2026 that a .398 on base percentage is exceptional. If you have a slugger who can get near 350, that generally will play in almost any lineup across baseball. You'll take that, right? And so the fact that he's hovering around 400 for an on-base, that ultimately, if you finish near 400, you're going to be in the top 10 in baseball every single year. I don't care. So, and we shall see. I don't know if this is something that's going to be sustainable in terms of on-base percentage, but I think the power is clearly going to play. And the reason that Murakami has been able to be this productive is because what we've seen now here firsthand is that he's exceptional at avoiding expanding his strike zone. So even though you can beat him with a fastball in the zone, you better beat a fastball in the zone. Because if you don't, he has that easy power, which you're going to hear from Chris Getz later in the show here on White Sox Weekly. He has easy power that if you don't get it by him and you are in the zone, he will make you pay for it. And that's what we're seeing here. It seems like on a daily basis, we saw it last night. You're going to hear plenty of home run highlights throughout White Sox Weekly because, it wasn't just Murakami, but Montgomery, Vargas. So there's lots of home runs coming your way to celebrate a fantastic week for the White Sox. But the key here is, yes, he does not expand the strike zone. So he's forcing pitchers to come in on him if they want to get him out. Now, maybe a lot of pitchers will just, they won't, and this is going to be a subject of our, it is a subject of our Twitter poll on X today, our White Sox Twitter poll question. But he may not necessarily be intentionally walked, but it might be the old intentional walk, right? Where people don't put anything near the strike zone because they're going to make, this is something that I can envision happening throughout the season, where they force other players in the White Sox lineup to beat them. And sure, that may be the case. That might be something we see a little bit more often, especially, I would imagine, in the near future because of how hot he has been hitting home runs. I would anticipate more teams over the next few weeks forcing, you know, pitching around him. And again, he's shown the discipline where he is not going to expand his strike zone. He's going to take his walks. If you come in the zone and you beat him with the velocity, so be it. You might strike him out, but if you don't, he might hit a homer on you. So that's going to be pick the poison for every opponent that the White Sox face here moving forward. And again, 11 homers, 256 batting average, and a 398 on base, which is good for, by the way, a 183 OPS plus. That is 83% better than league average. He is crushing the baseball, and he's been an extremely valuable piece to the White Sox here in the early going. And the White Sox are playing good baseball, and it's not just on the hitting front, but they're pitching well too. So we've got a lot to tackle here on White Sox Weekly. If you want to join me again, the number is 312-332-3776 each and every Saturday, 2 hours prior to our pregame coverage. But it's basically extended White Sox pregame coverage for you. That's what I always like to say. Talking White Sox with you, talking about a fantastic week for the White Sox, and they have returned to the South Side for a homestand. You got the Nats here for the next 2 days, and then the Angels will come on in once the Nats leave town. So lots of good baseball to be seen here on the South Side. Come on out and join us. In fact, if you're not coming today, Family Sundays, folks. Bring everyone out to the ballpark this season for Family Sundays presented by Coca-Cola. Enjoy family-friendly activities. Plus, kids get to run the bases after the game. Tickets start at just $12. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we will relive Mooney Mania this week right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Captain Jay Hood, weekday morning, 6 to 9, ESPN Chicago.
Murakami at the plate. And a swing and a fly ball out in the center field. Clark going back, still back. He's at the wall. It's a home run. And he sends one high and very deep and way out of here to right. It's a 6-1 lead. He has homered in all three games this weekend. The 2-1 is hit a ton to right. A long, majestic home run for Murakami. He's homered in four straight games. It's 5-0. And he swings, it's a high drive out into center field, and he's hit another one.
Boy, he has absolutely found his slugging swing.
Swinging a high fly ball, well hit, right center field. It is gone, number 11.
Oh, baby, indeed. That home run, his 11th of the season, came last night. But let's remember that Murakami had a streak of five straight games this past week before it was snapped in the series finale against the Diamondbacks, a game that the White Sox did have a huge home run as Andrew Benintendi came through with a three-run shot in the ninth to allow the White Sox to secure that series and finished 4-2 on the road this past week. But Murakami Mania, folks, it has been crazy this week. A home run in five consecutive games. That did tie the White Sox franchise record. That's right. The White Sox rookie, Munetaka Murakami, tied a White Sox franchise record with five home runs in a home run in five consecutive games in his first 24 career games. He has tied a White Sox franchise record. Just nuts, bonkers. It's kind of crazy to say that. And then there are so many other factors in play here. Let's note that his eight home runs on the road are the most in Major League Baseball history by a Japanese-born player in their first 24 games. That's four more than Shohei Ohtani, who had six in his first 24 as a hitter. I mean, it's just, they're mind-boggling stats. Everywhere you look, he leads Major League Baseball with three homers with an exit velocity of 113 plus miles per hour. And you say, why does that matter, right? So he ultimately, you hit a ball hard. But what it shows you is that when a player has that ability to generate that type of bat speed and create those exit velocity, that is, it shows you that he doesn't necessarily need to get a hold of every one for it to leave the park. He generates a lot of power. And so that's when you say, hey, why do I really care about the exit velocities? I'd say, you know what? They are a good indicator that there's going to be power that plays all season long. And that is something that here in the very early going, we have seen on display from Munetaka Murakami. Lennon DJ talked yesterday during the game, and this came on the heels of Mooney homering in yesterday's game. I'll note, you heard that one in the last homer in the montage there coming back, and just nuts, right? He goes five straight games with a home run, fails the homer in a sixth straight, and then just pops right back in last night and homers, and it is an easy power, and that's something that Len and DJ discussed yesterday during the game.
I'll tell you, partner, I'm getting to the point where if he hits one in the air in the outfield, I kind of assume it's a home run.
Well, just like all the fans.
He just has effortless power.
Yes.
I don't want to put Ohtani, that tag on him, but some of the power he's shown does remind me a bit of Ohtani in that. And remember that year he had maybe two or three years ago where he hit like eight home runs against the White Sox?
Yes.
Just felt like every swing just, it was 450 feet.
Yeah, and all towering high drives.
That's right.
Kind of like Mooney does, hit these high fly balls that eventually come down 400 feet away from the plate. Mentioned just a little up front, we're seeing a replay of the home run swing by Murakami. And he just kind of out on his front side, kept his hands back. Flick of the wrist on a pitch away from him and hooked it out of here.
So we could do analytics all night, but just anecdotally watching his swing and the way he goes about it, what is it? Is it about his mechanics? Is it about his bat speed? Just his pure strength? What do you see that gives him so much power?
Well, watch how he keeps his chin on his shoulder. His chin is on his shoulder, which always creates enough torque. As long as he keeps that chin close to the shoulder and his hands stay back because of it, doesn't matter what happens with his lower half. It can fly open. His hips can look bad. But in the end, it's all about he has enough torque with the upper body to create plenty of power.
Again, that was Len Casper and Darren Jackson last night during the game as Munetaka Murakami did homer here at Rate Field and starting a new streak today, right? Like, you can't have a streak until you have... that is what's on the line here today as the White Sox play the Nationals in the second of a three-game set here at Rate Field as they began their six-game homestand last night. First Friday of the season where the White Sox were donning the Red City Connect jerseys, the sweet cross-themed Bulls-centric White Sox jerseys that they debuted last year, you know, the second iteration of the City Connect that the White Sox have donned. And I will say, I think they're two for two, because obviously that the South Side City Connect, in my opinion, listen, I like the Bulls-themed red City Connects that they have, and they're a nice change of pace. But for my money, that South Side City Connect, when Major League Baseball first rolled out the City Connects, is still far and away the best of any of the City Connect jerseys in all of baseball. I would have to really think hard where I would place the red White Sox Bulls themed one in comparison to the rest of baseball. Maybe that's a project I'll try and sort through in the upcoming week and see where I personally would place it. But it's probably in the top 10 for me. I think I'd probably put about five or six other baseball City Connect jerseys ahead of the White Sox red version that they wore last night. But nevertheless, there's no shame in, you know, having what I feel are two of the best 10 City Connect jerseys in all of baseball, and having the top one, again, in the Southside one, my personal favorite. So anyway, 1-0 this year in the red City Connect jerseys as the White Sox won last night 5-4 in comeback fashion, too. Good to see. Lots of exciting plays, lots of hustle from the White Sox last night, too. Not just Murakami home runs, but also Sam Antonacci, Miguel Vargas, you know, busting it out of the box each and every at bat. And let's be honest, that's not something that was always prevalent here at Rate Field over the last 5 or 6 years. I think every White Sox fan out there, there was a huge frustration with Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert because they were dealing with a lot of lower body leg injuries, right? And I remember the source of frustration from Sox fans for a good chunk of time in the early 2020s when they just weren't asked to run hard out of the box because they were dealing with hamstring injuries and the White Sox didn't want to risk losing their bats, but they were still out there, but they couldn't give you everything busting it out of the box. And let's be honest, that's a hard product as a fan to watch. It just drives you crazy. I will tell you that has not been the case with this team under Will Venable the last couple of seasons. It was a point of pride for Will Venable when he came in last year, and it has only been, they've only doubled down on it and reemphasized it from the outset here this season. And again, you know, there were moments during the road trip. There was a moment last night when Miguel Vargas running hard out of the box creates a single because he's just busting it each and every time. So it's not just the easy power from Mooney, but it's also a team that is playing hard-nosed baseball that I think a lot of White Sox fans can appreciate, and is going to be a fun team this year because we'll see what the ultimate win total ends up being, but there's a lot of good things happening here on the South Side, and it is just a better product to watch these days. Hey, Sox fans, bring your pup out to the ballpark on Monday, April 27th, that is this Monday, for Dog Day, sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Grab a seat in the outfield and watch the Sox take on the Angels at 6:40. There's limited availability, so to purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Jeff Meller hanging out with you here on White Sox Weekly. Let's pause 10 seconds for station identification.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
When we come back, I will let you hear from White Sox general manager Chris Getz, who met with the media yesterday prior to the start of yesterday's game as the White Sox kicked off their six-game homestand. Lots to discuss, of course, including a lot on Munetaka Murakami. And even Chris Getz, I think there were moments where he admitted there has been a little bit of surprise as to just how quickly he has acclimated himself to Major League Baseball. We'll let you hear it next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Jeff Meller takes your calls after the game, ESPN Chicago.
And the pitch to Montgomery is hit a ton in the air to right. It's a long home run. And he hits a fly ball center field. This one well struck, and it is gone off the batter's eye wall. Montgomery hits a towering fly. This one deep. It is gone. Three straight home runs in his first at bat, and he sends one high, very deep right center, and she's gone. He's now homered in four straight games.
Big week for Colson Montgomery as well, not just Munetaka Murakami. And no sophomore slump for Colson. He now has 28 home runs in his first 97 career games. That is the second highest total in White Sox history, behind only Jose Abreu, who hit 31 in his rookie season in 2014. Montgomery also has 73 RBIs, actually did that. You know what? Let me see here. Did he? I think he had one last night, right? I'll have to check that. Nevertheless, Colson Montgomery has been productive, and he, somewhat under the radar, had a four home run game streak while concurrently with Munetaka Murakami's five consecutive games with a home run. They became the first teammates in Major League history to both have a homer in four straight games together. First time in the history of baseball that happened this week. And, you know, I spent a good 20 minutes or so, maybe the first half hour, primarily talking about Munetaka Murakami, rightfully so. And, you know, this is one of my first real mentions of Colson Montgomery because he got overshadowed with that streak. So it's good things are happening and a lot to be excited about with the White Sox, who won last night and had a winning road trip. And they look to win their third straight series today here at Wright Field. First pitch comes your way at 3:10 today. And it will be another young player that everybody is enamored with and excited to continue watching, and that is Noah Schultz, who will make his second career start here at Wright Field, his third career major league start. He got his first win last Sunday against the A's, and he has a chance now to try and pick up his first home win here today. To touch on a lot of it right now, we'll let you hear from White Sox general manager Chris Getz, who met with the media prior to the start of yesterday's homestand. And, of course, as to be expected, Munetaka Murakami was the initial topic of discussion.
What did you take from that road trip overall, aside from the offense just really coming to life?
Well, you look at, you know, you play two quality teams like the A's and the Diamondbacks, and to be able to get two series wins, you know, is good, is big for us. To go on the road and do that against teams like that is definitely a positive. I think more than anything, we go into a game each night with a chance to win, and I think that signals that the White Sox are a better team and an improved team. And we have a chance to win each and every night. Obviously, you don't want to get ahead of yourselves and just focus on the game in front of you. But regardless of who's on the mound, or both for us or the other team, you know, we've got a chance to win.
Are you enjoying the home runs?
I think everyone enjoys home runs. But overall, just the quality of at-bats, the plate discipline, and then taking advantage of pitches that we can drive. So, you know, the quickest way of scoring runs oftentimes is hitting home runs, and we happen to be doing that, at least in this last road trip.
Craig Counsell said yesterday that in modern baseball, you can't win without hitting home runs. For a general statement like that, do you agree with that? Do you agree that has to be a part of a winning offense?
You definitely need to have power, you know, in the lineup. But power can show up in different ways. It's not even necessarily hitting the home run. It can be, you know, the threat of the home run can show you can score runs just because of the threat, just based on how pitches are attacking. But you have to be able to take your walks too. And we've shown that. I mean, Mune is a prime example of someone that's punishing, you know, certain pitches in the zone, but anything outside of the zone, he's taking and earning those walks, and other players are exemplifying that as well.
How much is what Mooney does translate to everyone else feels good about what they can do at the plate?
Well, he creates, you know, plenty of action. He does, and the action is either with his bat or when he doesn't swing and he takes walks. So, you know, that level of patience and the threat at the plate, you know, potentially brings more opportunities for other guys that are coming up to the plate with him on base, and just RBI opportunities, things like that. But that patience can have an effect, and you know, you when you're in a lineup, when you're a hitter and you're watching someone having success like Mune is having right now, you know, you take note on why he's having success. And not everyone has the power that Mune has, but that patience, that the ability to take pitches that are not strikes or pitches that you cannot do damage with, and that's really something that we stress. But when you have a player that is exemplifying that on a regular basis, you know, that can have influence on others as well and how they take their at-bats.
Why do you think he's been able to do that so quickly? It's just in his DNA?
You know, yes, I do think that he's got some natural ability. He's got an engine that is, you know, he's got gifted power, but it also, it's combined with a work ethic that is, you know, top of the scale. I mean, he's a guy that not only pays attention, but you look at his work on the field, both defensively, his base running, you know, studying, you know, video and how pitchers are going to attack him. His understanding of his own craft is something that he prioritizes. So you've got work ethic and skill, and, you know, that's a great, recipe for success in this game.
Chris, you called him one of the best, most prolific power hitters on the planet when he signed him. And some of us kind of like, okay. And he's really showing it. I mean, he enters today with 10. And Wood on the other side is Dan, and do you feel like...
Well, it was a bold statement, and I appreciate him going out there and hitting for power and supporting that statement. So, I think, you know, that statement was driven by the fact that you know how much power is in that swing, in that body. But we also know that it's, you know, easier said than done to actually go out there and hit for power. And he's really... you know, dialed it in fairly quickly in this league, which, you know, you never know until, you know, he gets the at-bats under his belt. But thankfully for the White Sox, he's gone out there and performed well.
I know, yes. I'm not going to get a great answer to this because it's it's an early question, but what are the possibilities of the White Sox agents getting together and talking about an extension?
Oh, I don't know. You know, obviously... He's gone out there and performed really well quickly in his White Sox career. Our goal, you know, from the beginning is making sure that he can just go out there, be comfortable, be himself, knowing that if he can get comfortable, he can be a productive major league player. So I certainly don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but what he's done so far has been really impressive.
You know, your predecessor would have said, stay out of White Sox business and we'll let you know when there's something to know. You're nicer about it, but
Your job is to pay attention to White Sox business. So, but I just happy for Mune, and certainly, you know, we feel fortunate that he's in the lineup with us.
And you'll let us know when you start.
Absolutely, you'll be the first.
I mean, given his age, do you have to think about or at least assess him in terms of like, could this be a long-term piece of our organization because he can fit with the rest of the core?
Yeah, naturally, you look at that. Anyone that's wearing a White Sox uniform, okay, is this someone that, you know, we want here? Do we feel like this is someone that's going to be productive for a long time? And age is certainly a factor. That's just part of, you know, the equation when you're putting together a team, both in the short term and long term. So, but it's still, you know, more than anything, we're happy where he's at right now, and he seems to be very comfortable.
Yeah, he told us in Phoenix that he loves it here. He loves his teammates. Obviously, that's the way to go, right? When you're playing for the team, but he seems to genuinely fit. And you talk to people around him. Coaches, players, they like what he's contributing aside from what he's doing on the field.
Yeah, there seems to be a genuine enjoyment of being with this team, with this group of guys, and being in the city of Chicago and playing for the White Sox fans.
What's the plan for Shane Smith moving forward, and how has he progressed in Charlotte?
He's done well. You know, we tasked him with some drill work and some areas to focus on, both with his delivery and, you know, his body had changed a little bit in terms of delivery, and we just wanted him to get back on track, and he's worked really hard and he's done pretty well. He's got a start tonight, and we'll see how tonight goes.
With the hiccup that Teal had, can you tell us where he's at and what you guys are planning for him?
Yeah, Teal, you know, he's still doing well. You know, we haven't quite been able to get it to the finish line. There's always this, you know, final stage and threshold that needs to be met before we send someone else on a rehab. You know, we want to be very careful when it comes to Kyle Teal and certainly a hamstring. So I know that he had a really good day yesterday, and he feels good today. So we'll see how this weekend goes and take it from there.
With the extended absence that he had, when he does get a rehab assignment, how long do you anticipate the minimum that you need to spend in the minors before you might call him up?
Well, he's been out for a while now. You know, he missed a chunk of spring training, obviously all of the regular season so far. So, you know, you want some at-bats, you want him to experience the different nuances that exist in every game. So both behind the plate, you know, base running, and certainly the at-bats as well. So I don't have a finite number on the amount of at-bats or amount of games. It's one of those, you kind of read the situation, take his feedback, take coach's feedback, and take it from there.
What about Austin Hayes? Any update on where he's ever
to? Hayes was running the bases today. He had early batting practice. If that goes well, then we'll send him on his way.
What did you see from Noah Schultz in his second start? Any takeaways after the first one? It seemed like he had some nerves just making his debut and having so many friends and family in attendance.
Yeah, Noah, I think it was just the first inning of his debut. Other than that, he put us in a position to win the game, and he ended up salvaging the outing overall. But his second outing, he seemed much more comfortable, and I think it was just going through that experience of getting game number one under his belt. But that was the Noah that we had seen both in the past in the minor leagues and certainly, you know, this year in Charlotte. So it was a very encouraging outing.
You have an update on the Tommy John recovery guys, how they're progressing, you know, Drew Thorpe, Freelander, Kai Bush.
Yeah, all those guys are doing well in their recovery. And, you know, I would say that the rehab is staying on course.
You guys got word on Tanner McDougal came out of the game the other night?
Yeah, he had a little bit of hamstring tightness when he was covering first base. You know, there weren't too many concerns with the strength testing, and you know, today there was a little bit of soreness. We're going to alter, you know, some of his in between start work, but as of right now, he's planning on making his scheduled start.
So that was Chris Getz, at least the first portion with Chris Getz yesterday, as he met with the assembled media after a successful road trip prior to the start of the six-game homestand that the White Sox are currently in the midst of. Hey, Sox fans, grab your friends. Head to the park for Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. Get one ticket and two beers starting at $24. You must be 21 and over with a valid ID. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews. When we come back, there's more from Chris Getz that we will catch you up on right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Hear Lennon DJ and High Def on 100.3 HD2.
Swinging a fly ball, well hit, right center. Benintendi thinks he got it, and he is right. He hit that one almost into the pool. A three-run homer. It's 4-1.
That's how you know it was a good week, when we're almost an hour into White Sox Weekly, and we have yet to play a three-run home run in a tie ball game in the top of the ninth that secured a series win for the White Sox. That's exactly what Andrew Benintendi did Thursday afternoon as the White Sox were wrapping up their six-game road trip earlier this week. And, you know, that was the one game where it's, you know, Munetaka Murakami did not homer on the road trip. And, you know, Colson Montgomery and Miguel Vargas did not either. But it didn't matter because Benintendi was there to come through in a big moment for the White Sox, and they went on to beat the Diamondbacks 4-1 in that game. Davis Martin, excellent in that outing. Again, I haven't talked about Davis Martin yet. I mean, that's, again, it's been a fantastic week for White Sox fans and the White Sox because of the way they finished off that road trip and started out their homestand this week. And again, Davis Martin, brilliance as he gave the White Sox yet another quality start in that game, 6 1/3, 7 strikeouts, only allowed 1 first inning run, and really has been a rock for the White Sox so far this season in their rotation. So again, so many great things to talk about. If you'd like to talk about them with me, I'm here as always, 312-332-3776. That's the number to jump on in and talk White Sox baseball with me, Jeff Meller, hanging out live at Raitt Field, getting set for the second of a 3-game set against the Nationals here this weekend. Head to the ballpark on Friday, May 8th, as the White Sox take on the Seattle Mariners at 6:40. Be sure to stay after the game for post-game fireworks. It is presented by Steinhoffels. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Here is more from White Sox general manager Chris Getz as he met the media yesterday.
How would you assess the defensive capabilities of the team you've seen so far? I know defensive numbers take a while to kind of like show you anything, but there's some outliers on one side or the other given the players and reputations that they have. What have you seen? What have you liked? What have you not liked?
Yeah, it's been fairly positive, just our overall defense. You know, Pereira's made some really good plays, you know, in the outfield. You know, we've asked Antonacci to play left field. That's obviously an area that he's still learning, but he's made some really good plays, and he's made good decisions with his throw-in. Sometimes when you know, put players in foreign positions or positions that they're learning, sometimes, you know, the decisions on where the baseball goes is something that, you know, will show up. But he's taken to the position pretty well. Overall, you know, you go across the infield and fairly happy. Mune being an example of that, someone that's getting more and more comfortable at first base, but that's just a testament to his work ethic and desire to improve and prove that he can, you know, be a productive defensive player. Colson's done a nice job. Mydroth, you know, Vargas, when he's gotten his opportunities at third base, he's been fairly consistent. So I'd say overall, the, you know, happy with the defense. There's, you know, you always, you know, look back at some of the positioning. You look at the recommendations on where guys were and if they've been drifting. So it's just something that you always need to stay on top of. But our guys have done a nice job.
One more, Mooney. When you're evaluating a player, you think you know what you're getting in the player, but a month in with the production and everything you've seen, is there something that surprised you about Mooney? Not just maybe production aside, that you're like, man, this is something the evaluation did not show.
Well, I still go back into the transition to the major leagues. You know, you might have an idea of what the ceiling of the player is, but you don't know how quickly it's going to get there. And it just seems to be happening quicker than I think anyone really anticipated. And that's really no knock on the player. You just don't know how someone's going to take to, you know, playing in a different league, different country, facing different pitchers and different environments. But he's just so dialed in on his own craft. And, you know, the work ethic is just so strong. You know, that I know that there were concerns with, you know, velocity, and, you know, with high end velocity in this league, you know, if you've got a hole, it just seems to be getting exposed. But the one thing that gave us confidence is, you know, for one, the training methods that we're able to provide Mune and other players here, and the frequency in which you're facing the velocity. You know, if you don't have those training capabilities, and you're not facing, you know, that type of velocity on a regular basis, I don't think it's a fair assessment just to assume that someone can't do it.
Do you have after 25 games or so, do you have a sense of what the competition's like right now? You spend so much time in the offseason building a team, watching yours, putting it together, but as a baseball person, do you have a sense where some of the American League competition is right now?
Yeah, always pay attention, and beyond just the American League, just the league in general. You know, the teams that defense has become a high priority. Contact, you know, in the, just contact in general, let alone in the zone or outside of the zone, and not chasing. And then, you know, building teams with more speed than I think it's been in years past. So, you know, the I'd say that's a league trend more so than just the American League. You know, so you know how the teams that we're facing and the, you know, the approaches that our pitchers need to take, and the small details that pop up during the game. You know, you look at safety squeezes and the offensive approaches of some of these teams, and you know, we've had discussion on, you know, how to defend the safety squeeze, which is a difficult play to defend in general, but pitchers making quality decisions on whether to throw home or to first base, you know, what are the pace of the baseball when it's coming off the bat and the direction and how to handle that. So those are conversations that we seem to be having more frequently now than we have in years past. So, you know, that's certainly that has shown itself. The way that bullpens are being built, you know, you kind of sense the trend of, you know, different arms taking the late innings. You're seeing that more now than I think you have in years past as well, with not having just a, you know, one closer or one setup guy. So not anything much different than how we're approaching things, but those are certainly some trends that have shown up.
After Milwaukee, has there ever been a sense for you where you felt, oh, we're overmatched in this series?
You know, the Milwaukee Brewers are a very good team. I think, you know, more than anything, they were just airtight. They were playing really well. I know that they've fallen in the standings a little bit in the NL Central, but that's just been a really competitive division to begin with. But Milwaukee, their style of play is I think what other teams are trying to model themselves after. And we weren't ready for them, clearly. And they exposed us, but I'm going to view that as something, you know, getting exposed to that early on has set us up to hopefully have future success.
With Brandon Montgomery, are you a kind of a level-by-level guy with what he's doing? Could he force the issue, or he could go from Birmingham straight to here?
You know, it is case to case. You know, we've brought up guys from Double A, you know, and then there's other guys that we feel like will benefit by spending time in Triple A. I don't know. When it comes to Braden, I would anticipate, you know, him going to AAA at some point when the time is right. But, you know, most importantly, he's playing really well. You look at his decision making, you know, his contact skills, the power output, and then just his defensive ability. He's played a really good corner outfield. He's played pretty solid in center field as well. So we want to make him as well-rounded as possible. If we feel like AAA is a better test, then we'll have that conversation. And, you know, I lean on Paul Janisch and Josh Barfield and others in the front office to suggest moving a player like him, and we're continuing to have those conversations.
25 games in, Chris, of the ABS system. Do you guys as a team have any conversations internally about how it might be best utilized going forward? I think there was a game during the road trip when you guys were out of challenges early. Or is it just an impossible task to ask a catcher, hey, don't challenge early because you think it was a strike? If he thinks it was a strike, he wants to challenge it.
Well, you know, I think every ABS challenge or lack of challenge is a learning moment, and those conversations are ongoing. You know, there's certainly times where it's, you know, a better use, and then there's other times where not so much. You know, then there's the glaringly obvious calls. I think, you know, the catchers right now are ahead of everyone else, which makes sense if you think about, you know, the hitter, what's at stake with a hitter and pitcher, and the emotions that exist in those particular moments. So yeah, I think it really is you know, important to focus on the development of the catchers and making those sound decisions. You know, but overall, I think we're still learning. We really are. You know, and you know, I think that it's becoming a big part of you know, swaying games one way or the other and figuring out what moments are higher leverage than others. But overall, I think we've done a nice job. There have been some learning moments, but they're you know, we'll continue to stay on it with our catchers or whomever it applies to.
Do you think, you mentioned the conversion rate for catchers has been better, I think, league-wide. Do you anticipate that could be something that not just your team, but teams in general could be, hey, you know, unless you're absolutely sure as a hitter that you think you're going to get that one overturned, it's better used to save for the catcher to have late in the game?
That could develop. You know, I don't know if, you know, now's the time to make that determination, but based on the trend right now, I could see that happening down the road.
Harrison Pereira kind of really got on track in his previous, like, MLB opportunities. They were pretty short. I know he hasn't had a ton of runway yet, given the injuries he's had, but has he already kind of answered some of the questions you had a little bit about him? Or at least things trending positively?
Yeah, he's done a really nice job on both sides of the ball. You know, there were some mechanical offensive adjustments that he made in spring training that really focused on. Now you need the runway to test that, and you know it's paying off. He's a guy historically that doesn't chase out of the zone too often. There's been still times you know that it has happened, but overall, really happy with his development, and you know another opportunity to bring in a player that hasn't quite gotten the runway elsewhere and able to do it here, and he's taking advantage of it.
Edgar Caro's, you know, super hard on himself, you know, pretty much, you know, with this opportunity he has with Teal out, have you seen him, like, you know, pressing a little bit offensively in a way that, you know, seemed uncharacteristic to him?
Maybe a little bit. You know, he's been stronger historically right-handed than left-handed. I think he's probably got more at-bats left-handed than you know, at least that he did last year, considering we had Kyle Teal here. I view this as a learning opportunity for him to get more reps left-handed because it's still going to pop up. You know, he's a guy that, you know, can be critical of himself and hard on himself. But, you know, we're going to continue to throw him out there and continue to help develop his overall game. I think more than anything, you know, going back to what I said out of the gate, when you feel like you got a chance to win going into the game, regardless of who's on the mound that night, that you know that we've taken a step forward, and I would say that we've reached the point that we've got a chance to win on a daily basis.
That was the voice of White Sox general manager Chris Getz yesterday, prior to the beginning of the White Sox current 6-game homestand after a successful 4-2 road trip this past week. Sox fans, enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win the Ultimate Tailgate. The winner and 7 guests will receive VIP access to the Minute Maid Spiked Tailgate and tickets to Friday, May 15th against the Cubs. You must be 21 or older with a valid ID to enter. Visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly as we are here each and every Saturday, 2 hours prior to the start of our pregame coverage. When we come back, another fantastic home run moment from this weekend. And what's wild about the next group of highlights that you're going to hear, they weren't even the most exciting home run in the ballgame that day. We'll talk about it next, right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Stream the games live on the ESPN Chicago app.
The 2-1 is hit a ton to right. Long, majestic home run for Murakami. He's homered in 4 straight games. It's 5-0. Vargas smokes one. Line drive deep left. Gone! He just snuck it over the low wall. They go back to back. It's 6-0. Montgomery hits a towering fly. This one deep. It is gone! 3 straight home runs. 7-0.
White Sox went on to beat the Diamondbacks on Tuesday of this week, fueled by those back-to-back-to-back jacks, courtesy of Murakami, Miggy, Monty, the M&M&M boys, as I've been calling them, Mooney, Monty, Miggy. I think it works. Yeah, sure, you have Mantle and Maris. I'm going to give me Mooney, Monty, and Miggy. Let's slow the roll there just a little bit, obviously. I think they got a little bit more to accomplish before we put them in the Mantle-Maris combination. But hey, could the White Sox trio out-homer the Yankees duo? That in itself, White Sox fans, would be one hell of a season and probably worthy of a moniker if the trio can out-homer the Yankees famous duo Mantle and Maris. I'm just thinking it through now as I kind of go through. I mean, Murakami's probably going to have to do quite a bit of the heavy lifting, but if he can get to 50 and if Colson can get to 30, that gets you 80. You'd still probably have, what was it? Probably you'd You'd probably need another almost 30 from Miggy to usurp their total. I'll get the exact number here in a minute. But as good as that was, the trio going back-to-back-to-back on Tuesday against the Diamondbacks, that wasn't – none of those were the most exciting home run in the ballgame. In fact, Sam Antenacci registering a 57-foot home run was the craziest home run in that game.
The pitch. There's a ground ball fair into the corner and left, and I think the ball boy touched it.
Umpire said no contact.
No contact, and the left fielder just gave up. Gurriel stopped. Pereira scores. Antenacci trying to go all the way around the bases, and he will. That'll be an inside the park home run unless they change something, as Gurriel just quit.
Yeah, because the ball dude down the line acted like he tried to field it, and I believe the umpire saw that it just went through his legs. He didn't make a play, especially when the umpire's saying it is fair.
The spectator, authorized personnel on the field touching the ball.
So this will be overturned. It'll end up being a double.
These guys are all told down the line, don't interfere with a live ball. Don't do it.
Here's the thing, though. And it's an older gentleman. It looks like it's a long time off the bat.
Yeah.
But when you're in that position down there, you're going, oh, my gosh, that ball's coming right at me. And it's like a second and a half. You're probably kind of panicked.
Just let it go. Don't defend him. Just let it go. Just don't touch the ball. Just let it go and then go pick it up by the warning track if it's a foul ball.
Since there was no call for interference on the field, it's not reviewable. Play stands.
Oh, wow. Not reviewable.
Oh, man.
So that's going to be, I believe, the first career home run, right? It's got to be.
Yes, it
is. No error involved.
Absolutely.
Sam Antenacci with an inside the park home run.
Oh, my goodness.
It's 10-2.
Congratulations, Sam.
Torrey Lovello, by the way, can't believe it. And I think the umpire is going to tell him, hey, this is the rule.
Hey, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., don't quit on the play. If you don't want it to be an inside-the-park home run, the first career home run for Sam Antenacci. And I said it on Tuesday night. That is, I guess, the eye of the beholder, right? It's either the greatest or ugliest first career home run in the history of baseball. But quintessential Sam Antenacci, as he never let up, kept running hard, and picks up his first career big league home run in inside the park fashion. Just wild in Tuesday night's game against the Diamondbacks. And again, you know, it should come as no surprise. Anybody who's been following the White Sox minor league system is well aware of the type of player that Sam Antenacci is. You probably got a glimpse of it in the World Baseball Classic as he played for Team Italy, the type of motor he has and the high baseball IQ that is always on display on the field. But Antenacci, that was a fun moment this past week on Tuesday. And again, in a game where you had back-to-back-to-back home runs for the first time since 2020 for the White Sox, an inside-the-parker, pretty wild here. And I did some quick math as we were listening to the Sam Antenacci inside-the-park home run, and Mantle and Maris hit 115 home runs together in 1961 when they made the M&M Boys a famous household nickname. Maris, of course, broke Babe Ruth's then home run record of 60 with 61, and then Mantle hit 54 that season. So the M&M Boys in 1961 put up 115 home runs. So if the White Sox trio of M's hit more than 115, or maybe if they just tie it, we're going to go with the nickname the M&M Boys. Again, Mooney, Miggy, Monty. I'm throwing it down now. I'm seeing if it sticks. Right now, the trio has 23 home runs. So they are 92 shy of tying Mantle and Maris. So they've got their work cut out for them. But again, maybe, if Mooney can go for 50-plus this year, maybe, just maybe, that trio can do it. Murakami currently on pace for 69 home runs. That's right, I said 69, folks. Very nice. That would be a very nice total by Murakami. It wouldn't break the record, But nevertheless, it would be one. It would break the White Sox franchise record. So we've got a lot of fun things ahead of us this summer here at Raitt Field. So hopefully we'll continue to see lots more homers from Murakami, Vargas, and Montgomery. Jeff Meller here, hanging out with you on White Sox Weekly, as we do each and every Saturday, 2 hours prior to our pregame coverage beginning. We do extended pregame coverage with White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we'll take a quick peek around the majors, get you caught up on what happened around Major League Baseball as well this week, right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Sox games on the go. The ESPN Chicago app.
There's someone I want you to meet.
Who?
I want you to meet the Mets. Meet the Mets. Step right up and greet the Mets.
Meet the Mets. Meet the Mets. Step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your
meet
kiddies.
The Mets.
Bring your
meet
wife.
The Mets. Step right up and beat the Mets. That's the song that Major League Baseball was humming along to over the last 12 or so games. Now, this past week, the Mets finally snapped a 12-game losing streak when Juan Soto returned from the injured list. And in the very same game, Francisco Lindor promptly left the game and had to be placed on the injured list with calf tightness, a similar injury that Juan Soto had been suffering from. But the Mets have been absolutely horrific this season. It has been a nightmare for them. But again, they did finally snap that 12-game losing streak, and they have promptly lost another game after that, though. Mets are 9-17 on the season. What's wild is as much as the Mets have struggled so far this year, the Phillies actually are in last place in the NL East. They are currently on a 10-game losing streak. They're going to see if they can best the Mets losing streak right now. But yeah, the Phillies have been absolutely atrocious as well. So, and those are two teams that I think a lot of people who cover baseball expected to, at the very least, be in the NL East race, if not securing wildcard positions. And certainly it's still early. You can always turn things around, but you hate to fall so far behind out of the gate here. And the Mets and Phillies have just had really tough starts to the season. Now, the Phillies do actually get Zach Wheeler back today. He's making his major league debut. Remember, last year, Zach Wheeler had to be shut down as he was dealing with thoracic outlet syndrome. He had to undergo surgery, and that's a really tough injury for pitchers. You never quite know how they're going to respond when they come back. I will say that for Zach Wheeler, it has not been great in his minor league rehab starts. His velocity has not really been close to where it was at his heights last season when he was a Cy Young contender before the injury ended his season prematurely. But he'll return for the Phillies and try and help them end their current losing streak. Elsewhere around baseball, not sure if you saw what the Pirates did yesterday, but they were taking on the Brewers, and the poor Brewers, man. The Brewers, for only the second time in Major League Baseball history, they got the chance to square off against the reigning Cy Young Award winners in consecutive games. Now, part of the reason that that doesn't have a long history is because, of course, interleague play really only began in the 90s, so it only became possible over the last 30 or so years where a team actually had the ability to do so. But remember, in the early stages of interleague play, it wasn't quite like it is now where you get a chance to play, you know, virtually every team in baseball. Back then, you'd kind of have one division where you'd play some interleague games against, and, you know, usually wouldn't play 10 or so teams in the other league anyway. So anyway, there hasn't been a long opportunity for teams to do so, but the Brewers got Tarek Skubal on Thursday when they were playing their series finale against the Tigers. They lost that game. They actually put four on Tarek Skubal, but Spencer Torkelson hit a walk-off home run to win it for the Tigers in that game. And then the Brewers got the opportunity to go home and square off against the Pirates in their series opener, and Paul Skeens was on the mound. And just in case you weren't locked in on baseball last night, Paul Skeens carried a perfect game into the seventh inning last night before Jake Bowers eventually broke up the perfecto with a two-out single in the seventh. So Skeens ended up going seven innings, allowed one hit on the evening. And because Skeens was so dominant, it actually overshadowed White Sox rookie phenom Connor Griffin, who I call him a rookie phenom. He was the top-rated prospect in all of baseball when he did get the call-up, and he signed an extremely lucrative nine-year extension with the Pirates earlier this month. Well, Griffin, who was 19 when he got the promotion, he turned 20 yesterday. So it was a happy birthday, Connor Griffin, and he celebrated with his first major league home run. So 19 years old, as a teenager, Connor Griffin could not hit a home run, but as a 20-year-old, he already has one in the books one day into turning 20 as the Pirates beat the Brewers yesterday evening. Some other news from around baseball, as we always like to keep you up to date on what's going on here on White Sox Weekly. Not just White Sox related, but I know everybody out there are baseball fans. How about the Red Sox absolutely clobbering the Orioles in an early afternoon game today? And I just, it's kind of interesting that I just ragged on both the Mets and Phillies for having disappointing seasons. The Red Sox are also in the midst of a very disappointing start to the 2026 campaign, as they are 9-17 right now, but it looks like they are actually improved to 10-17 as they are hammering the Orioles 17-1 right now. That game is in the bottom of the ninth inning. Garrett Crochet finally getting back to looking like an ace pitcher. Remember, he got hammered the last time out. He gave up, I believe it was 11 runs, 10 earned in his last start. Well, today he went six shutout innings and has struck out seven Orioles on the and the bullpen for the Red Sox has only allowed one run since they've taken over for Garrett Crochet. And again, they are about to finish off the Orioles, as they're in the bottom of the ninth, winning 17-1 in that one. Not sure if you caught this one, but Lucas Giolito signed a contract with the San Diego Padres. One-year deal for $3 million. It can improve to $5 million if all the incentives are met. There is a mutual option for both Giolito and the Padres if they'd like to pick that up next season, although mutual options these days rarely get picked up. So likely just a one-year deal for Lucas Giolito, who obviously we know very well here in Chicago from his time as a starter with the White Sox. But he has been added by the Padres. A lot of people thought he was somebody who would have been signed, you know, before the regular season even began, but teams were apparently reticent to sign Giolito to a deal that he thought was worth it. But the Padres, they suffered an injury to Nick Pivetta, who they were hoping would provide them with significant innings this year. So they needed somebody to step in into the rotation. And so they came to an agreement with Lucas Giolito this past week. The Padres actually are a half game up on the Dodgers in the NL West. They're 17-8. The Dodgers are 17-9 after they lost last night to who actually are on a 10-game winning streak right now. The Cubs tied up the Reds atop the NL Central. They're both 17-9 right now. Again, on a 10-game winning streak. And then I did want to note, too, how about the Braves? They are a major league best 19-8, and they suffered some pretty tough injuries to their starting rotation early this year. They lost Spencer Schwellenbach and Spencer Strider. Now, Strider is actually, I believe, set to return here in the next week or so for the Braves, which will give them a little bit of a boost to their rotation. But when anytime you lose two starters before the season even begins, a lot of people, you know, question what you can actually achieve during the season. And the Braves have bounced back nicely. And don't forget, also, they had Jerickson Profar, who was suspended for the second time in his career. So he was lost for the season as well. So the Braves had a lot of adversity in the offseason, and it has not stopped them from jumping out to, again, a baseball best 19-8, a 7.04 win percentage for Atlanta. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. Let's take 10 seconds right now and allow stations a chance to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Sox fans, join us at the ballpark Saturday, May 9th, as the White Sox take on the Mariners at 6:10. 15,000 fans will receive a women's athleisure jacket presented by Rush. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly, getting set for game 2 of 3 between the Sox and Nationals here this weekend at Wrigley Field. Once the Nats leave town, 3 more on this current 6-game homestand as the Angels will follow up the Nats here in town. And one more note before we get back to some White Sox talk, I wanted to mention Jose Soriano, who is the probable for the Angels on Tuesday. And if you have not seen what Jose Soriano has been doing for the Angels, it is absolutely absurd, folks. Jose Soriano, after his most recent start where he went 5 shutout innings, has lowered his ERA on the season to a 0.24. And that is the best mark in Major League Baseball history through any starter's first 6 starts. So he will make start number 7 here at Wrigley Field on Tuesday. So if you love great pitching, and you don't want to just, you know, you're looking for an excuse to, okay, what White Sox game do I want to go see? That one could be as good as any, because Jose Soriano will be on the mound for the Angels. We'll see if the White Sox can jump on him in that one. But first things first, White Sox and Nats here today. And it will be Jake Irvin on the mound for the Nationals, and he will be opposed by Noah Schultz. We'll talk a little bit about that coming up here later in White Sox Weekly, but let's take a quick timeout right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The Rich Eisen Show, weekdays, noon to 2, ESPN Chicago.
Miguel Vargas sends one high and deep to left field. It is gone. A 2-run homer. The pitch. Vargas smokes one. Line drive deep left. Gone. He just snuck it over the low wall. There's a swing and a high towering fly. Deep left center, and it is long gone. He's now homered in 3 straight games.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly. Len Casper on the call of Miguel Vargas's 3 consecutive games with a home run on the road trip. And Miggy deserves a little bit of love because, of course, Murakami and Colson Montgomery stole a lot of Miggy's thunder because they were in the midst of longer consecutive home run streaks as he was piling up his 3 straight games with a home run. Miggy got a little bit of love last night as the White Sox in their Red City Connect jerseys were also celebrating Miguel Vargas with a bobblehead giveaway last night. That's got to be pretty cool, right? You get your own bobblehead. Got a bunch of people showing up. It looked like Miguel Vargas had some family members in attendance pregame. We were watching Brendan Riley, the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, and myself were watching here in our booth at Wrigley Field. Pregame, as Miggy was going through his routine, he had, it looked like a lot of friends and family members hanging out with him. And then it was obvious because they were all sporting Vargas jerseys, number 20 on the back. And, you know, Brendan said, hey, you think that looks like his family? I was like, yeah, it must be, right? they got a bunch of Argus jerseys, you know, following him around. He, clearly, friends and family are hanging out. And then we quickly remembered, oh, yeah, that's right. It's Miguel Vargas bobblehead night. And actually, Miguel's mother threw out the ceremonial first pitch yesterday before the game. So, cool night for Miguel Vargas. And something that Will Venable talked about with Len Casper on the manager show yesterday before the game was just how Vargas kind of helps set the tone for the team with his hustle and the fact that getting out of the box every single time it has been apparent Miguel Vargas is flying as fast as he can. And to paraphrase what Len was saying to Will yesterday during the pregame show, 99 times out of 100, it may not matter. Right. But that one time out of 100 when a player is busting it out of the box and it results in a close play at first that he actually beats out, that's why you do it. Because you just never know when that extra hits is going to come in handy. And sure enough, last night, Miguel Vargas busting it out of the box. He might have been safe, but ends up being safe because he was running hard. And then comes around to score the winning run in last night's game. So kudos to Miguel Vargas for always hustling and helping set the tone for the White Sox, which, again, is something I noted earlier in the show, has not always been the case here in recent seasons. And so it's fun to watch not just the home runs fly off of his bat, but the all-out effort he gives each and every game, each and every at-bat. So just a bobblehead. Well earned. And three home runs on the week, we should give a little love to, because again, it got a little bit overshadowed with Murakami and Montgomery becoming the first teammates to ever hit home runs in four consecutive games together. And Vargas, Murakami, and Montgomery became just the third group of teammates to ever homer in three straight games together. And of course, those were the home runs that you heard with Vargas there. Jeff Meller hanging out with you here ahead of White Sox and Nationals here at Raitt Field on Saturday. Game 2 of 3 coming your way later today. First pitch is at 3:10. We'll officially begin our pregame coverage at 2:30. But as I always like to say, this is just extended White Sox pregame coverage for you here each and every Saturday, White Sox Weekly. So I did want to hone in a little bit. We played for you Chris Getz earlier, but something that I find interesting watching not just the White Sox games, but all around baseball, is the implementation of strategies when it comes to the ABS system. Of course, the automated balls and strike challenge system, which is now in place for the first time here in the majors. They've experimented with it in the minor leagues. And of course, for the last two spring trainings, Major League players had the opportunity to go ahead and challenge and kind of try and get accustomed to it before it was introduced here at the start of the 2026 season. And now we're seeing it play out before our very eyes. And it's interesting because there are moments where you'll watch a player have like just a terrible challenge, right? Like they're not close. They might miss by almost, there's been some challenges where up and they'll miss by what, by almost a foot. And those are the ones where you're like, really, what are you doing? And I would make the argument that in some cases, I think what's more egregious is count and situation. And I don't know if this is going to be the case, but I think it's certainly possible that going forward, I wouldn't be surprised if you see teams say to players, listen, I know you always want to get ahead in the count, but first pitch early in the game, like let's just say arbitrarily, like first three innings, first pitch, if it's a called strike and it's still early, I could see teams just saying to their players, no, don't challenge. You do not challenge the first pitch in the first three innings of a game. Why? Well, listen, leverage matters. Count leverage matters. You certainly want to be ahead. It's between, in particular, 2-1 versus 1-2. It is huge when the batter has the opportunity, knowing that they can kind of just, you know, squared up and just let it go on a 2-1 count versus trying to protect on 1-2. It's absolutely huge, the difference in what you see, not just batting average, but, you know, slugging percentage on those, the difference in count leverage. So those matter. But I would you know, suggest that 1-0-0-1 in the first three innings, you can't risk burning a challenge. And that was something that I asked Chris Getz about a little bit more yesterday. And then I also asked Will Venable yesterday in pregame. So I want to play for you their answers in response to my questions about ABS and just what they've observed in the early going so far.
I think every ABS challenge or lack of challenge is a learning moment, and those conversations are ongoing. You know, there's certainly times where it's, you know, a better use, and then there's other times where not so much. You know, then there's the glaringly obvious calls. I think, you know, the catchers right now are ahead of everyone else, which makes sense if you think about, you know, the hitter, what's at stake with a hitter and pitcher, and the emotions that exists in those particular moments. So yeah, I think it really is you know, important to focus on the development of the catchers and making those sound decisions. You know, but overall, I think we're still learning. We really are. You know, and you know, I think that it's becoming a big part of you know, swaying games one way or the other and figuring out what moments are higher leverage than others. But overall, I think we've done a nice job. There have been some learning moments, but they're, you know, we'll continue to stay on it with our catchers or whomever it applies to.
Do you think, you mentioned the conversion rate for catchers has been better, I think, league-wide. Do you anticipate that could be something that not just your team, but teams in general could be, hey, you know, unless you're absolutely sure as a hitter that you think you're going to get that one overturned, it's better used to save for the catcher to have late in the game?
That could develop. You know, I don't know if, you know, now's the time to make that determination, but based on the trend right now, I could see that happening down the road.
The reason I brought that particular instance up was because there was a game earlier in the week when Edgar Carroll lost the second challenge for the White Sox fairly early in the game. I don't know if it was the third or the fourth inning, but they were, you know, reduced to no challenges at that point. And it ended up not mattering because the White Sox ended up winning handily. But it's certainly something that has piqued my interest watching now, just the, you know, the implementation of new strategies with a new element of the game that you're dealing with. So after we heard from Getz, I decided to follow up with Will Venable, who met with us yesterday about some of the Sox philosophies on ABS.
I think, you know, early on, you want to support guys to, you know, utilize it as a tool to, you know, do the right thing. Certainly, towards the end of games, it becomes even more important to have it on the defensive side. Yesterday was a really good example where, you know, once Banny hit that home run, we shut down the challenge for our guys to be able to make sure that we had one on the defensive side in the bottom of the ninth. So, you know, as you're navigating these games, having the challenges certainly does matter, and really does kind of dictate, you know, how liberal you are with them offensively.
Had you done that before, of saying like, hey, we're shutting this down for, you know, the rest of the game?
Yeah, from day one, that was part of our strategy, probably across the league, you know, as you're setting up kind of the broad guidelines for how you want to utilize the system. I think that's kind of an obvious one that I'm guessing a lot of teams are implementing, and kind of from day one, that was part of our message.
So there you go. So I thought that was a little bit revealing from Will talking about, yeah, there have been where they've shut it down and told their players, hey, no challenging on, you know, as a hitter on a potential strike call that you think was a ball, because we need to ensure that we have one available to us in the later innings. And he mentioned in particular after Benintendi hit that home run in the ninth inning on Thursday, the series finale against the Diamondbacks, that he told the team, no challenges. We're up three runs. We have to make sure that we have a challenge available to us in the ninth inning. They turned it over to Sir Anthony Dominguez, who closed it out for what was his fourth save. Was it his fourth or his fifth save? I believe it was his fifth save. But they wanted to make sure that they had one available in case they needed it, because as we heard from Getz when I was asking him the question, you know, the success rate, the conversion rate for catchers is higher. And I think that makes more sense. Like, if you think about it logically, they've got the best view of the pitch. They're right behind the plate. They've actually got a better view than the umpire, right? The umpire oftentimes, part of the reason pitch framing has become such a big talking point over, I'd say, the last decade or so, and why it's been something that teams have harped on so much, is because they understand that the human eye can only see things so well, right? And there's some guesswork that goes into it a little bit for the umpires, or at least I think part of the way umpires have formed their ability to call games has been somewhat reliance on where catchers catch the ball. And so that's why framing matters. The catcher has the best view. So even though he may deceptively be fooling umpires into stealing some extra strikes, he also has an idea when an umpire misses a call, and that's why their conversion rate is better. That is why you want them to have it available to you in those instances, especially late in the game when you have in a lead, when you have a lead or a tie game and you're trying to close it out. How many times have we seen just 25 or 26 games in for teams? We've seen a 3-2 ball call flipped to a strike, you know, a ring hitter up. It has happened quite a bit already. So I thought that was interesting yesterday hearing Will reveal a little bit that, yeah, there are times when just like you get a take sign as a hitter, or you get, you know, you and the base paths, you know, do not run, we're not stealing here, that you're getting take signs or, you know, they're shutting it down. No challenges. We need to make sure we have them available as defensive challenges. So I thought that was a pretty interesting from both Will Venable and Chris Getz yesterday prior to the game. Hey, White Sox fans, learn from the pros this summer at a White Sox summer camp. Starting at $165, kids ages 5 through 12 can register for a 4-day baseball camp. Campers will receive a Sox swag bag with a White Sox branded compression arm sleeve, 2 tickets for a 2026 White Sox home game, and much more. To learn more, visit whitesox.com/camps. Make your summer plans now if you need something for the kids for a couple of weeks. Perfect opportunity to get them out of the house and doing something in the sun with the great folks here at Chicago White Sox Baseball. Jeff Mellor back here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we will get you set for today's action. Noah Schultz on the mound for the White Sox, making his second career start here at Wrigley Field, his third major league start in the big leagues. We'll talk about it next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The home of the Sox. This is ESPN Chicago.
Here's the pitch. Low and in, and Carroll will challenge a sweeper, and it is a strikeout. 3-2. Swing and a miss. Strike 3. 1-2 pitch, and he got him swinging on a high fastball that time. Swing and a miss. Strike 3. There you go. 2-2 pitch. Foul tip. Strike 3. That was a cutter from Noah Schultz. He's got 5 strikeouts. 2-2. Got him looking outside corner, and that might have been a little off the edge, but no challenge from Clark.
Noah Schultz on the mound today, number 22, the 6'10" lefty, will be on the mound here at Wrigley Field later today. Those were the highlights from last Sunday, Noah Schultz's second career start in his big league career. He went 5 innings, only allowed 1 home run. That was the only hit he allowed last Sunday. Struck out 6 as he picked up his first major league win against the Athletics. And he will be back on the mound today as the White Sox and Nats get set for the second of 3 here at Wrigley Field. As the White Sox go for the series win today after their win, their 5-4 win last night over the Nats. They will try and win their third straight series today, and they'll have a chance to do so tomorrow as well if they can't take care of business today. So can't wait to watch Noah Schultz on the mound yet again. And, you know, he was a little nervy in the first inning in his big league debut when he – it was April 14th when he made his big league debut here at Raid Field. He had what was reported about 500 people in attendance. You can understand why somebody who was making their major league debut in front of so many friends and family members was a little bit nervous in their first inning. He settled down after the first inning. He had the error that ended up on the bunt play that allowed a couple of runs to come in against the Rays, but settled down nicely after that. Actually was able to walk off in the fifth inning when he struck out the final batter that he faced in that game to a standing ovation from a large majority of friends and family. And it was a pretty cool moment. And then again, on Sunday, this past Sunday against the Athletics, looked really good, going five innings and striking out six and only allowing that one hit. So can't wait to see him in action today. And then I did want to mention too, before we get out of here real quick, our, you know what? We might have to just save that for the pregame show. Yeah, it looks like we're going to run out of time here. Just so much good Sox coverage, folks. So don't worry, we'll do that. We'll cover what I wanted to hit on our web poll question in the pregame show later today. Be close to the action this season. Located directly behind home plate, the CIBC Scout Club offers complimentary food and beverage, in-seat service, and VIP parking with a private ballpark entrance. For more information, visit whitesox.com/premium or call or text 312-674-1000. All right, so we got an interesting web poll question regarding Muni Murakami's intentional walks this year, which we'll hit on in our pregame show, and also all the normal stuff coming your way. Thanks to Jake Santos and the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, Brendan Riley. I'm Jeff Meller. We'll talk to you here shortly to begin our White Sox pregame coverage on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.